I think YouTube can collapse your initial learning experience to where you become productive from 3 or 4 years to 1 or 2 years. If you're motivated, if you take your time when you've been on the job and you come home and you just leave the six pack in the refrigerator and you don't worry about football for a while and you just flip through the channels that you feel are teaching you something, you're going to get smarter faster.
All right, welcome to another exciting episode of the Essential Craftsman podcast. I'm Nate. I'm with my dad, the Essential Craftsman. We have a topic at hand that is I'm looking forward to because it feels like it's the first conversation we've had here where I know a thing or two.
Fair enough.
And that's really the only way I would describe it is a thing or two, meaning I at least have something to contribute. And we kind of want to talk about not so much social media, but just all of this modern content creation and the videos, the podcasts. It's just, it is such a wild frontier right now.
It is.
We find ourselves involved in it on the production side, but I'm a rabid consumer of all of it myself. And even if I wasn't involved with Essential Craftsman, I would be having a similar conversation about how incredible it is. It has become over the last few years, all of this information, all of this entertainment, all of this value that is just dumped for free to anybody who, you know, wants to pay attention.
Yeah, it is amazing. I feel for the first time in my life like I am with a whole bunch of people that are on the crest of a wave instead of a whole bunch of people that the wave either just rolled out in front of them or a whole bunch of people that are about to have a really big one just come right down on their head.
Yeah.
It's a crazy feeling to think, wow, this is what it feels like to be part of the crest of a wave. It's really interesting.
Yeah, and think about what a blunt instrument TV and radio are, where you're just kind of one person is just, you know, talking into a microphone or a camera to everybody in however vicinity that, you know, antenna can push it out to. No, you know, and they're maybe making a what message is going to be the most entertaining to all these people, and it kind of turns out it's silly game shows and Jeopardy and all this kind of stuff. Okay. And now with this new landscape of social media, you can precisely and with great precision find exactly the right audience, but more importantly, I can find exactly the right expert talking about what I want to listen to with none of the fluff on either side, you know, just and then there's a whole group of people who are shared interests all of a sudden assembled and connected.
So I wonder what the dynamic is going to be of that, of all these communities coalescing in these places voluntarily. This is where I want to be. These are the people I want to talk to. These people sound like me. I wonder what that's going to translate to over time.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure politically, there's going to be a lot of echo chambers and closed off sort of non-helpful results from that as people just kind of lock themselves in with like-minded thinkers. But I don't know if, for example, the blacksmithing community, that's going to be the result because you're going to be learning more about blacksmithing as opposed to just like talking about the same item kind of over and over.
So that's an interesting thing that, and I don't know, we're going to maybe run off on a tangent here, but that was one of the first things that amazed me when I encountered part of the blacksmithing community here as a group. Mm-hmm. A week after I got the tools that Bill Vann gave me, the Northwest Blacksmith Association fall conference was in Douglas County. It was just up at Oakland. Mm-hmm. And I just got these tools. So I went up there and I was shocked. You had Marine Corps guys high and tight. I know now it was Psy. You had ponytails, you had tattoos, you had people almost in suit and tie. You had every possible manifestation of Oregon culture, all peacefully fascinated on something that had nothing to do with what divided them and just soaking up all the information they could and the camaraderie and the fellowship of this little community. And I thought, wow, this is as healthy as anything I've ever seen.
Are you watching a lot of YouTube or consuming a lot of social media or podcasts or anything?
I watch almost no YouTube now. Having said that, though, one of the things that I love about YouTube is I can sit down with your little boy, Leo, and we can watch Coyote Peterson, and I'm learning things about a really successful YouTube channel and what he's got going on there. And Leo and I are just kind of engaging a 62-year-old man and an 8-year-old. How old's that kid?
He's six.
6-year-old kid. Sharing equally in this YouTube experience that is real. It is real. And when he takes that cow killer wasp and lets it sting him on the arm,
yeah,
man, I pucker up just like Leo does, you know, so that's pretty neat.
But so Coyote Peterson, if you're not familiar, is a kind of wildlife outdoor host. And think about Steve Irwin or some kind of Animal
yes.
Planet thing.
Yeah.
He's a younger guy. He's just terrific. He deals with insects and snakes and reptiles, and he has a fantastic program.
It's fantastic.
And I love it, and kids love it, and it's just amazing.
Yeah. Part of what I'm admiring when he's doing that is saying, look what this guy has built with his own two hands.
Yeah.
You look at his subscribers and his video library, and you think about being on the ground rolling around with water moccasins and
yeah.
playing those dangerous games. Man, it's really something.
Yeah. One thing I've noticed about YouTube content creators, and let's talk about YouTube people kind of for the next minute here, is I watch a lot of different types of channels and a lot of different types of people. And in a lot of ways, it doesn't matter as much to me what the topic is, as much as just the host and their level of expertise and energy on
yeah.
said topic. For example, over the last couple of weeks, I was watching this fishing guy, Catch 'Em All Fishing.
Yeah.
And the guy is obsessed and knows everything about fish in Florida.
Yeah.
Freshwater and saltwater. I mean, all of them. He's got them tanks and aquariums and kiddie pools full of them in every nook and cranny. The guy's a fanatic. And just seeing his almost, I say fanaticism, it sounds bad, but it's more impressive. Like, this guy is an expert.
He's a zealot and yeah. an expert. Yeah.
Right. And then Leo and I will watch Coyote Peterson, who's that way about reptiles or wildlife, and Leo will watch now these videos about RC cars, and so I've kind of paid attention, and sure enough, there's this entire universe of people who are experts in RC cars. So point being, it's just entertaining to see people who are so committed and yeah. into their hobby or
yeah.
field of expertise, and there's something about that. I don't have much interest in any of those things on my own, but all of a sudden I do when I'm watching them.
So it occurs to me that that must be why YouTube is killing network television, because you're combining entertainment, which is what every media outlet is providing. They're all providing entertainment, but it gives you the opportunity to combine entertainment with education.
It's like direct to consumer. It's kind of like, you know, if you wanted whatever product, you had to go to the retail store to buy that product uh-huh. from this kind of middleman, uh-huh. and that's just how it went. Now, you can very often buy it straight from the factory to your house. That kind of middleman person is not a part of the equation. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of these networks are experiencing that, where they may have operated more of a middleman role. And
yeah.
We can have Coyote Peterson direct to us. I'm sure yeah. Steve Irwin would have been a huge hit on
oh,
YouTube.
Boy. Oh, boy.
But, you know, he luckily was able to.
So that illustrates it perfectly. So Steve Irwin was terrific. But the number of videos that exist of Steve Irwin series is probably, I'm going to just go out on a limb here and say, probably 25% of the number of videos that Coyote Peterson's put out in
yeah.
a shorter period of time. Just the ability to bring that content to market now is just
yeah.
way better.
It really is. Yeah. That fishing guy I mentioned, Catch 'Em All Fishing, I think he might do it all with a phone, just like held like this, because it's like shaking and jiggling everywhere. And it really feels like, there's no studio backing that guy up. And yet. I've really enjoyed watching it, and so have probably hundreds of millions of other people, because
yeah.
his channel's enormous.
So my YouTube consumption in the past was quite a bit. I went through, what, maybe 8 months or a year after you'd kind of turned me on to YouTube before we approached it in a different way. And I started getting deeply immersed in it, primarily with wildlife videos. The African wildlife mm-hmm. videos to me were just so compelling. I had no idea
yeah.
what a 10,000-year brawl lions and hyenas have been in.
Yeah.
I had no idea
yeah.
that they just despise each other and
yeah.
will do anything they can to shed the other's blood. I just didn't get that.
Yeah.
I think the first part of that, you turned me on to that video Battle at Kruger.
Yeah.
That still is one of the most astounding things I've ever seen.
Regarding wildlife, I a few months ago was watching a lot of hunting videos, and this speaks to that. I think probably within like a, let's say like a 3 month period. So when I watch YouTube, for the listeners, maybe a lot of you do it this way. I most often kind of put it on in the background when I'm doing something else.
Wow.
So I don't usually watch it the way maybe you watch a movie where it's kind of like mm-hmm. all my attention. It's kind of just on, you know, maybe it's music, maybe it's something else, but, so I let these elk hunting videos kind of run, and I bet you over the course of 3 months, I heard more elk bugles than Davy Crockett in his whole life. I mean it. I mean, yeah. I have heard like these sounds and like seen these situations that I have no right to have seen or heard.
Yeah.
I never paid the price and put myself in the position to see that moment. And yet now with YouTube, I feel.
You've lived those things.
And a lot of those videos, I really recommend them. I would find myself holding my breath.
Yeah.
Like not flinching and kind of like, I'm going to not, it's subconscious, but it's a real experience. And I felt like I got to experience that in addition to just hearing and seeing the animals in ways that are kind of a once in a lifetime event for the rest of humanity. Yeah. I cheated.
Yeah.
Thanks to this.
So riffing off of that, when you go buy an elk tag and decide to go elk hunting here, we may do that one of these years, right? It's going to be just like those kids that walk into my blacksmith shop having watched those video games and forged swords, you know, at the anvil for, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, kind of an interactive video thing. And they, I want to forge a sword. And they pick up that hammer and they instantly realize, wait, I don't know how to hammer.
Yeah.
Now that's not, you know, that may or may not be true because you hunted a little bit as a kid. We hunted a little bit. So you actually have a sense of that. But man, it's a crazy thing to be able, what you said, to be able to see those moments that we don't earn.
Yeah.
You know, that's really true.
I feel bad for those creators. In fact, there's some fellas in town in Roseburg, from what I understand.
Yeah, HogQuest.
Oh, I don't know about them.
Isn't it them?
Oh, no. There's a channel called Born and Raised Outdoors.
Yeah, okay.
And we got to find them out. I think we could probably locate them. But as content creators in hunting space, it would just be tough because the audience, guess what? At the end of every video, they want to see, antlers on the ground. They make a lot of videos that don't result in a kill, and that would be a challenge to have that be your type of content where there's that sort of expectation sort of hanging out there.
That's got to be one of Coyote Peterson's advantages. You can always find a hornet's nest. If you spend a day or two, you're going to find a hornet's nest. You're probably going to find a snake, but it's not that way when you're looking for a royal, you know, a Rocky Mountain elk royal. It's hard to find that.
Well, I don't know. I think Coyote may be in a similar thing. I remember when he was chasing a tarantula hawk around.
Oh, really?
And I lived in Arizona for 10 years and spent some amount of time in the desert. I never saw one.
Wow.
And
okay.
I imagine just walking out there thinking, okay, I'm going to find a tarantula hawk.
Yeah,
good,
maybe.
Good luck.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
But the point you are making might be more relevant, like with maybe like a news channel where the guy can turn on his camera and talk about the day's news.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's going to be news and he can talk about it.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
totally within his control. Yeah. All right. So the next question then, what do you think it is that makes a great channel? Or let's just maybe move away from just from YouTube and say sort of great social media content anyways. You've obviously got a thing or two to say about it as someone who's been successful there. What do you think it is?
Authenticity. I think if it's not it, and of course that's the buzzword, right? And I didn't know that applied to any of this until, you know, just 2 or 3 years ago. But if it's contrived and it's not, if it's not authentic, it's boring.
Yeah.
And I think that is part of the big distance that YouTube's putting between itself and network television, that when it comes to a studio, it is not authentic.
Yeah.
It's produced, it's overproduced, it's scripted, it's made up, it's all of it. And so for me, if there's a slightest indication that it's not authentic, sorry.
I've tried putting myself in videos before, and it's authentic for me to speak to a camera the way I would to anybody else, but it's also super boring. In other words, there is something else to hold people's interest and be charismatic that Coyote Peterson can do really well, and a lot of other folks as well, that is more than just being authentic.
You know? Steele.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Alex Steele.
Exactly.
He's in our, I'm not saying that I'm in his wheelhouse. Okay. I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
That kid really is a blacksmith, you know, in this broad general category. But that kid, you can just tell he was like that in his high school classes and drove his teachers crazy and they loved him and they were so glad when he graduated, you know. That's him right to the bone, and that's why people watch that guy, or one of the reasons.
Yeah, blacksmithing is the perfect hobby for him because just all that energy can kind of move out. If he was like making stained glass or something, it would be, he'd be bouncing off the walls, but he can be smashing. But that's the example. It is being authentic, but you also have got to be charismatic and have some energy. And like I said, I've been unable to convey that, and I think maybe in my actual interactions I'm maybe more charismatic than I tend to be in a camera, but a lot of people lock up on a camera. Mm-hmm. A lot of people feel like a camera is like a gun pointed at them,
and
they
don't
like it. And so it's not everybody who can, not everybody's cut out for, you know, that type of an experience.
Whatever that is.
What do you think the impact of this is going to be on the trades? In other words, both in terms of the available information and content, in terms of these specialized groups, do you think that there's some change on the horizon for people who work in the trades or the trades in general as a result of this new landscape?
So if Mike Rowe is right, we're coming up to a real shortage of tradespeople in the United States, maybe Western Europe. I don't know how far it extends. I know that Australia's already got one going on. So if we're coming up to that, I think that this is possibly a game changer. I think YouTube can collapse your initial learning experience to where you become productive from 3 or 4 years to 1 or 2 years. If you're motivated, if you take your time when you've been on the job and you come home and you just leave the six pack in the refrigerator and you don't worry about football for a while and you just flip through the channels that you feel are teaching you something, you're going to get smarter faster. Mm-hmm. And you're going to get raises faster. And I think it could accelerate the time it takes us to spin up the next generation of tradesmen. That's separate from whether they're any better or any worse or any more reliable or whether they work any harder. I have no idea how to impact that. But just in terms of getting the knowledge into more heads and hands, I think it's going to save us.
Yeah. I also think tradesmen, and this includes truck drivers, and if you're driving a truck all day, you can't read and learn.
That's
and maybe you would want to. Well, now you can. Or if you're whatever trade it may be, mowing yards or laying shingles down or whatever it is, you can now also learn.
Yep.
And that might be for entertainment, but there's so much learning you can do through these audiobooks and everything that I think it's possible that tradesmen and a lot of these blue collar folks might really be able to grow leaps and bounds by now being able to capture some education that previously was sort of academics or maybe people with more money who could just afford to study instead of having to pay the bills.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the clever and the curious tradesmen are going to gain a lot from this ability to tune
in. Jordan Peterson talks about that this whole thing now of being able to learn high level stuff at from people who have significant mastery of their topic in your spare time, in the time that otherwise was throwaway time.
Yeah.
Driving down the road or putting the shingles down to put those earbuds in and be listening to people that no one could have afforded to listen to for hours and hours and days. And Adam's doing that, right? So Nate's younger brother, I have three boys. Middle son is just, he's on fire with learning all of the stuff that he can learn with his drive time.
Yeah.
And man, that kid is racking up some, not only general, not only broad, but in some areas, some deep knowledge.
Yeah.
I wish I would have had that.
Yeah, just think about that. All the hours and hours that were spent just with, you know, just the job site background noise and tools.
That's right.
Could now be, even if it's not all day, even if it's just an hour here, hour there, sometimes an hour of consuming something plants that seed and you can then kind of digest it and think about it, and you know it can really bring fruit, even just if it's only 1 hour a day or less.
Think of that. That is a really important point. That 1 hour a day is probably 1,000 times more exposure to things you had never heard of before than we were getting before podcasts and earbuds and Bluetooth and the internet explosion of media.
Yeah,
I mean it's way more than you were getting if you weren't spending tens of thousands of dollars in tuition or you know whatever the setting is.
my wife listens to ebooks, and she oftentimes when she's talking about them would say, I read this book. And for a long time, I gave her a hard time because I'd kind of be like, you didn't read it. You listened to it almost as a put down. But I kind of can see, and not just now, I have changed my thinking on that because, okay, maybe it's not as good as reading, but to act like it's not good,
right?
Or to act like somehow, okay, and I don't actually read a lot. So I, this wasn't me being snooty. Maybe this was me being defensive and sort of trying to justify and act like, well, I don't read, but you don't read either. I think it's probably what I was doing. The point is, it doesn't maybe matter. You don't have to read a whole book, you know, in a leather chair with a fire in order to feel smart. Maybe you could listen to a portion of it mm-hmm. while you're doing something else and still gain a lot. I think I'm trying, and I think I have kind of realized how wrong I was there to sort of be snooty that like, that's not really reading or that's mm-hmm. not really education. Or, that's not really learning unless X. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
So I read a book to this, the Gutenberg Elegy, the Gutenberg Elegies, I think. And he talks a lot about this. I can't remember the author, okay, 62, boys, can't remember nothing. But he spoke to that, and he acknowledged that there is not a small but a big difference between listening to a book and reading a book, but that they both are powerful vehicles for learning. Mm-hmm. And for being entertained and for just brought, you know, learning soft skills and all these things that they both are powerful. You know, he was a bibliophile, loved books, loved the texture, loved the smell, loved everything. And I have to say he's right that the advantage to a book is you can read and immediately go back and reread mm-hmm. and then you can lift your focus away from the page and think about what you just read. And that you can't, I don't think you can do that in the same way, but hey, you are in fact living vicariously in someone else's head. When you're listening to an author's narrative, whether you're reading it or listening, you are experiencing another person's reality.
Yeah, and it's like a good, better, best. Is it the best to read a book? Yeah. But is it better? Or is it still also good?
That's right.
To consume it through headphones while you're laying shingles.
That's right. And especially like the Jordan Peterson, Sam Harris, Ben Shapiro, these thinkers that are thinking thoughts that haven't been thought much, mm-hmm. you know, and there's a whole universe of these people out there from all different perspectives and with all these different things to say. And I am a real fan of listening to them think out loud in real time. I just love that.
Yeah. Yeah, I really do too. It's such a treat to have this available. Mm-hmm. And even in my life, I was born in 1982. And so I definitely was a kid when radio was all you kind of had. I mean, you had cassettes, but it's just from, you know, you can make a cassette for somebody and mm-hmm. then you could make a CD and that got more songs. It just has, I don't know how it could get any better than it is right now.
How can it get any better than this?
How does it level up from here where on demand, anything, I don't know. I'm sure people will find a way.
Yeah. But. So we're going to read your comments to that question. How can it get any better than this in terms of real time access any level of thought.
Maybe filtering mechanisms, because I do, sometimes I'll bottom out my podcast list and I'll kind of be like, what do I listen to? And I'll scroll through available podcasts and it's just overwhelm. And so maybe there's some sort of filtering, or I guess that's the same with books. You read all your books, you need an advice for a new book.
Search engines for podcasts can get better.
I don't know. I'm sure they exist. And this is not a problem for technology. This is just an age old problem of getting good recommendations from people. So, maybe one of the last points I'll make, there's a Silicon Valley guy, Naval, and many of you probably have listened or heard his podcast or read his Twitter. And he made a point that I thought was so refreshing. And he talks about how he reads books. And it was basically, he kind of, and maybe I'm getting this wrong, Naval, so this is what I took from it. He kind of skims them and he reads the parts that stick out. And if he doesn't finish it, he doesn't worry about it. Mm. And he might have 3 or 4 or 5 books going at the same time.
Interesting.
And it was kind of like, oh man, that's great. Cause I've certainly started books I didn't finish that I still felt like I got a lot about. But like I said, there's some, in my mind, there's been some level of like, I don't know, stigma around reading where you read the whole book and then you can check it off and say you read it.
You got that from me because I would put money at the end of those classics.
Yeah,
and if you
fault.
Got to the end of them, there was the money. And to not do that was you defeated the whole purpose for opening the darn thing up.
Maybe that's it. And I remember even feeling guilty, almost like if you kind of just glaze over a page without, absorbing, and this is like in a novel where you're kind of like, oh, maybe I missed something in there, but probably I'll figure it out. And the point I learned from Naval was like, hey, it's okay. Read several, skim them, grab what you can out of them. You know, you're not held hostage by a book you start. Very, to me,
so helpful. Ken Jordan speaks to that. And before his stroke, he was a bibliophile, loved to read. And he thought that the author had the responsibility to keep me here. And if for any reason I can't stay, it's his fault, not mine.
Oh, that's interesting.
That? Yeah. I think I have been defensive and insecure about my lack of formal education. And so I always felt a little bit shamed and defeated if I couldn't make it to the end of a book, especially when I started reading formal discourse, you know, when I thought, man, I have to learn to read something besides Louis L'Amour if I'm ever going to amount to anything. And so I you probably got that from, if not subliminally, perhaps at dinner time conversations from me. But and in fact, so I just, a friend from the channel just sent me Homer's Iliad. Well, I was just thinking, you know, I don't think I ever read the Iliad, or maybe I was defeated by it as a young man. I've got to try that again. And there it showed up. And so we could probably talk about that, about how things that you have considered show up at the right moment. But so I'm going to start that. I'm going to gird up my loins and take a deep breath and dive in, and I'll let you know if I beat it or not.
I've kind of failed at reading over the last 10 years, and I just haven't read that much. Only, I don't know, a dozen books maybe, just not that many. And I hope that no one's taking away from this that I'm, or we are in any way saying it's not important, because it still is the most important thing. And Naval, who I mentioned, who I think is brilliant in these types of ways, he makes that too. You got to read a lot of books, and it's just so true. So I'm trying to like get myself back in the habit and build up my confidence and sort of help overcome some of my fears about reading, which I think I've been afraid that I kind of don't have the attention span to read anymore. I've been afraid that I have so trained myself to be entertained and watch a meme and then watch this video that I've kind of destroyed my attention span and ability to hold into things. So I'm kind of this year I've kind of worked on that. In fact, I just finished the first book of the year, which is, and I'll give it to you, you can read it, the Larry Hahn memoir.
Good. I would love to read that. So, so under the broad general category of trying to encourage worthwhile behavior in a son, I would say you haven't destroyed or damaged, but you might have let something get weak.
Yeah,
that's you might have let something atrophy.
Yeah, that's right. It.
But you know, you don't have to read if you don't ever want to be able to speak.
Yeah.
Because we learn to speak by reading other people's voices.
Yeah.
And to a certain extent, you don't have to read if you don't ever want to think.
Yeah.
You know, and if you just think about the force multiplier that it is to access someone's carefully considered and parsed and edited, to access their best thoughts put forward in the best way they can.
Yeah.
What a treasure that is.
Yeah. It's beyond a shame. It's kind of tragic to not capitalize that, especially if it's tragic. A person that you know you could learn something
That's
from.
Right. That's right.
It's kind of like, are you out of your mind? You're not going to read
Why
this?
Wouldn't you do that? So how was Larry Hahn's memoir?
It was really interesting. And part of the thing that was interesting was I didn't actually know that much about Larry Hahn aside from having watched some of his videos.
And he had skinny legs. We knew that.
Yeah, his super skinny legs and a cool headband. So it was really interesting, I would say. And it's kind of a memoir. He talks about his life, but he does it alongside talking about the types of houses he was building and around. For example, his mom grew up in a sod house in Nebraska.
Holy smoke.
Yeah. Yeah. And so he kind of starts there with his kind of personal history and goes through that. And he ends, he talks about housing tracks, of course, and mobile homes and travel trailers and which he lived in as a young man when he first moved to California. It was really neat. And I think that, and we'll probably talk more about him, more. In fact, we have been in touch with his wife.
Oh, I was going to ask you.
Yeah. Myla. And so I've just kind of been, I haven't
buried.
Got it scheduled, but been buried. But, I'm really looking forward to, and especially after learning more about him, to kind of, have a little conversation with her about him. But anyways, it was neat and he was insightful and he definitely thought about things in a way that I didn't expect, and I'll get it.
Oh, I'm anxious. So let's just make that as clear as we can, that we are hoping against hope to be able to engage with Larry Hahn's wife and talk to her about what her experience with that icon of of residential, West Coast residential framing was like, and how this blue-collar man decided to write books and decided to teach in a powerful way. What was that like to watch that from the sidelines?
One thing that I felt when I was reading it, and maybe we do a, after you've read it, we can have a breakdown of this book, but he wrote that when he was later in his life. I don't know if he was 80 yet, but he was definitely 75, I think. I don't know.
Is it called A Carpenter's Life in Houses or something?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Anyways, he wrote that towards the end of his life. And I was, a lot of the time when I was reading, I was thinking, you know, how he would have felt about some of those things if had he wrote about it when he was younger, you know? He would have had probably more energy and a little more, not so much energy, but it was very, the book was very retrospective and calm and peaceful, as you would expect from somebody looking back. And so that's one of the things that I thought a lot about, like, oh man, I wonder, and it made me kind of realize the value for maybe writing and putting some of that stuff out when you're younger, instead of just, and don't get me wrong, Larry Hahn Estate. I mean, the fact that he wrote all these books at all is game changing, and it makes him in the, you know, Hall of Fame of people who actually write a book. So don't misunderstand.
It makes him a singularity among construction workers. That's it. Okay. That's bam. It. Nobody like him.
But it made me just kind of even more curious. Like, wow, I wonder, for example, he, at one point in the book, he talked about, I won't spoil it. Why don't we do a podcast after you've read it and we'll do a book review, and maybe that, and in fact, one time we talked about having a regular part of this being a book review where we let the viewers know what we read, and we both read it and then talk about it. So if that sounds like something that would be interesting to you, let us know. And maybe this will be the first book.
Maybe the second one should be the one that we've already sort of mined a little bit, and that's Shackleton's book,
Endurance. Yeah, good idea.
Yeah, boy, that's a read. That.
Yeah, good call. All right, well, thanks for listening, everybody. Just to be clear, we love YouTube. We love social media. We love podcasts, all of it. We don't really feel like experts or in any way like we have advice to give there. It's sort of, we just kind of find ourselves in this space. And as you can imagine, it occupies a big portion of our world. And so this is something, at least I spend a good amount of my day sort of thinking about, for good or for bad.
Yeah, it has been a game changer. And like everything else, there's a whole bunch of unintended consequences associated with this, like everything else. And you wouldn't pick every one of those consequences, but on balance, the positive outweighs the negative by a wide margin. And as we continue to expand this podcast thing, that's just one more positive consequence of this whole shift, I think.
Okay, we'll catch you next time.